Welcome to the presentation on finding peace in our lives, the search of peace. Somewhat topical, if I can quote from Arafat, who's also looking for peace. A piece of the Gaza, a piece of the Galil, a piece of... Never mind. We're going to look tonight into the question, is it possible to find some clarity on the subject, which in a sense has a spillover in every area of our lives? Because when we're looking for peace, we not only want a definition that is a working definition, something we have a real handle on, but something that applies in the home, the marriage, looking for peace in the home, peace in the relationship with our children. Is it even realistic? Looking for peace within ourselves, being at peace with our career, which is not always going in the direction we want it to go in, even when we're in a responsible position, perhaps even the boss of this company, it's not always working under the control that we want it to be working under. There are so many different areas. How is it possible for a person to really experience peace in their lifetime? Maybe it's not realistic. Maybe it's an unfair goal that if I think it's achievable, I have already prescribed frustration. Or if it is realistic, then the question obviously begs, how do I get a handle on shalom? How do I get a handle on this idea of having more peace in my life? And when we consider the extraordinary times we live in, the advances in technology, in medical science, the explosion of information on every subject, on health. There's more information about health, about the workings of the body, about diet, the importance of exercise, nutrition, than has ever been available to us in any period of human history. And yet with all that information, do we experience more clarity and peace about our health, or is there actually confusion, and a lot of people experiencing out of integrity with their body, not at peace with themselves at all? We're living in a time, I don't think there has ever been in our history, of world history, a time where there's so much insight, psychological insights, therapeutic insights into the dynamics of relationships, whether it's marriage, whether it's child rearing, and yet, are we for this wealth of information, are we experiencing more clarity and therefore more peace in our relationships? Or do we find as much pain, if not more pain, according to the statistics of divorce and children who come from homes where they feel they really don't have a relationship with their mum and dad than ever in any other time in history? So the question begs even more, if we have so much information, we have so much technology to allow our lifestyle to be one of greater comfort, comfort that even czars, kings, pharaohs couldn't have dreamt in their time less than 100 years ago. The average person today enjoys luxuries and comforts, opportunities, the ability to travel, to eat exotic foods that kings and queens would have had to employ tremendous extent of effort to be able to travel and to be able to enjoy some of the comforts and foods which today take for total granted. Just walk into Pathmark or call it over the phone and it's delivered. FedEx, UPS, whichever. By the way, there's an announcement just coming in. You heard about FedEx and UPS, they're merging. It's the biggest merger in history. Yeah, it's going to be called FedUp. Never mind. Today we can have almost anything. Today we can have almost anything we want immediately, without paying for it, just quoting a few numbers from a piece of plastic over the phone, and we get billed for it a month later, plus interest, and minimum payment. I don't even feel necessarily the pain of the moment in that transaction, and yet the item could be delivered. If I call in before 4 p.m. today, I'll have it before 10 a.m. the next morning. We live with such luxury, such comfort, the question begs even more. Why isn't there more peace in our lives? And yet we look at ourselves, and I speak of myself inclusive, You're walking around, there's a beeper, a pump pilot, cell phone, and you're not even sure which one's going, and by the time you figured out which one it is, it's already caller ID unavailable and you missed it. I mean, it's absolutely amazing the pace of life that we are living at. And the question therefore begs even more. Is peace realistic in finding it for oneself? And if it is, what are the tools to allow it to become more consistently part of our lives? Hopefully, you will be the ones to decide if in the 40, 45 minutes left of tonight's presentation, whether we can walk out tonight with a greater clarity on this subject and a practical awareness of how I'm going to have more peace in my life, because it's a choice. And if it isn't a choice, then there's nothing more to discuss. If peace in my life is dependent on anything outside of me, then we have prescribed a definition that relies on something external, whether it's circumstances, whether it's an improved relationship with this spouse, with this child. If it's the other person who has to change, my boss, my co-workers, whoever it is in my life that has to change for me to experience more peace in my life, what I've essentially done is create a definition that takes me out of the power, out of the control, and out of responsibility. You have to change. My job has to change. My career has to change. My health has to change. My doctor has to give me a different diet. My nutritionist has to give me a different... Then I will be healthier, happier, more at peace with myself, as long as I've given responsibility to a person or event or circumstance or career. I've basically pointed fingers at something outside of me, and as long as it's not my choice, I'm not in control of peace in my life. And as long as one variable comes along and sabotages my attempt to find peace, if it's not a choice, I'm not in control of it, and I will remain out of control. What we're looking for is a definition that as we walk out tonight, we can understand that peace is more a choice, not of what's happening to us, but about how we process what's happening to us. And that choice is always a choice, no matter how severe or how extreme or how different the expectations and disappointments and people are that are closest to us in our lives. That shalom, peace for ourselves, is actually a choice. Can we rationally present that as realistic? And then find the tools that will allow us to walk out tonight and say, I can see how I can create more peace in my life by choice, and not depend on it happening to me when she or he or circumstances improve. Allow me to introduce to you Moshe. Now, I'm not sure if there's anyone in the audience tonight called Moshe, but I'm just making up a name right now. I want to introduce you to Moshe. Why am I introducing you to him? Because he's going to share with us tonight his personal search for peace. Now, Moshe is very special because he's worked very hard on himself, and he's going to tell you all about himself. Moshe, please, could you come inside? Hi, my name is Moshe. Moshe, could you please tell us about your struggle for peace? Well, yeah, I was earning six figures salary, not including commission. And I have to tell you, it was an amazing experience to be able to afford anything, to pay off my credit card bills and charge anything I want without worrying that I can't afford it to pay the full amount at the end of the month. It was a fantastic experience. But you know something? I discovered I was not at peace with myself. Because the company I was working for that was paying me $1 million salary, plus commissions and other perks, guess what they demanded of me? I was putting in a good 18 hours a day, 5 days and sometimes 6 days a week. And the weekends that I did have to myself was recovery. It wasn't for myself, it was just to be able to get back into 16, 18 hours a week all over again. And I was saying to myself, I'm not at peace with myself because on the one hand I'm extremely successful in one area of my life, but I'm not experiencing peace in all other areas. And what I found was that at one point I had no time to eat my meals. I rushed out of the house in the morning to get to the meetings, to get to the office, to make the appointments, to meet the clients. And I was taking, on average, six coffees a day. And what do I discover? Heart ailments. pains. I go to the doctor, and after testing, tells me I'm a prime candidate for heart disease and cancer. That reminds me of a joke. Guy walks into the office. I'll make it part of this whole thing. In fact, one day I walked into the office, and secretary says, "Oh, I'm so glad you came, sir. Your doctor called in with the results of your tests." "Oh, good. What did he say?" "Well, he said there's good news and bad news. Which do you want first?" "I'll take the good news." "The good news is you're going to die in 3 days." "That's the good news? What's the bad news?" "The bad news is he called 2 days ago. I forgot to give you the..." My doctor says I'm a prime candidate for heart disease and cancer. I said to myself, what am I living this pace for? I'm destroying my health. So I went to my boss. I said, "Look, I've got to negotiate with you that I cannot give you the hours that I agreed to in our original terms. I'm going to have to cut down. I need to go to the sports center. I need to work out every single day, 15, then 20, then 30, up to 45 minutes. And I need to do relaxing exercise. I need to take walks. So I'm willing to take a cut in salary, change my hours in order to accommodate my need to be at peace with my body." So my boss said, "You know what? You're so valuable to the company. Of course we're going to negotiate something that will work for you and still work for us." And you know something? The interesting thing was that the bottom line profit margin was still increasing. Because for giving more time to myself, I became more valuable in terms of the energy that was now being focused into the job in the 14 hours a day that I was committed to. And I was at peace with myself. My job was doing well. My body was gradually improving. But then my wife called me one day and said, "Moshe, it's not working out." "What's not working out?" "The marriage." What are you talking about? I can't take this anymore. You're still at the same pace as before." I'm at peace with myself. What are you talking about? You're at peace with yourself, but you're still doing 18 hours. It used to be 18 hours at work, but now it's 14, 15 hours at work, and then it's 3 hours with your walks and your leisurely pleasure trips and your relaxation exercises and your sports program every day. I never see you. There's no relationship here. Moshe, I want out of the equation. I want out of this marriage. There's nothing to talk about. So Moshe says, "You know something? You're right. How can I think I'm at peace with myself? I'm destroying my own marriage." So I went back to my boss. I said, "You know what? I know I'm very valuable, this and that, but I've got to cut down on my salary and my hours because I've got to date the most important woman in my life. I've got to start dating my wife." And I discovered that dating after marriage is more important than the dating before marriage. Because dating before marriage is to find out whether you want to marry this person. But dating after marriage is you find out about the person that you're married to. And I haven't been doing that. And so I took a cut in salary. I was only earning $750,000 a year. And I took off more time from work. And several times a week, 2 or 3 times a week, I would take out a lunch break. And my wife and I would go and do our own thing, whether it was a theater, a movie, go to a class in the middle of the week, whatever it was, one evening a week we'd go to, whatever we wanted to go, and we'd take turns, you go to what you want to go, I'll go along with you, you go along with me. And we discovered that we were able to accommodate by making time for our own relationship, for our own marriage, that we spent more time listening and talking and laughing and arguing and getting along with figuring out what are the issues we have to work through. So I felt much more at peace with myself now that my job and my health and my marriage was taking care of itself, or because I was making a choice to devote necessary time for the job, for my health, and for my marriage. And then I discovered I was out of integrity with myself. I was not at peace with myself because my 12-year-old daughter says, "Dad, I never see you." Oh, no. So I said to myself, "You know, I've got to make time for my kids." So I went to my boss and I said, "You know what? I'm willing to take a cut in salary and I'm even willing to compromise on some of the perks that I get in this company, but I have to take off twice a week half an hour before lunch break. What's now, Moshe? Your dog? No. Oh, it's my daughter, actually. I decided that twice a week I'm going to sign her out of school and take her partially out of the last class before lunch. And she has private tutoring anyway. She's not doing so great in that class. And I'll take her for pizza. Sometimes we'll go bowling. Sometimes just for a walk in the park. We'll go sledding when it's snowing. Well, I just need to spend more time, just fun time playing and having a relationship with my daughter. Because you know what? If I don't do it now, she's 12 already and she's going to turn 13 or 14, 15. She's not going to know her dad and I'm not going to know her. And she's going to look to other people as references for her authority and adult authority in her life, and who knows who that might be. So I would like to be the only man who she can only have in her life, really, legitimately, until she gets married. And how can I not be there for her? And I'm willing to take a cut in my salary because I need to be at peace with my relationship with my children. That's part of me. It's an extension of me. So the boss, who still felt that I was of sufficient value to the company, agreed to the new terms. I think I was even a little bit jealous. And so now I felt at peace with myself because I'm taking care of my career, my wife and family, my health and my kids. And then I discovered I'm out of peace with myself. Why? Because, guess what it was? I wonder what your bank statements look like. Maybe the cut in salary was cutting into lifestyle, and maybe certain things that we've been putting money into that now need to be maintained. So it's very possible that that would affect us. Maybe even the company itself will say, look, Moshe, you know, you've been taking off so much time, it's starting to manifest in the bottom line profit margin. It's not what it used to be, and we can replace you more easily. Yeah, there are many different things. Is it possible that as soon as we've started to make time and give focus to different areas of our lives, even if the relationship with the daughter is not immediately improved, but is it possible that by already planning in advance that I'm going to be taking off these two times a week for 1 hour, is it possible that I can know in advance that the accumulation of 2 hours a week, 8 hours a month, and multiply that over the weeks, months, and years, that I will be planting the seeds in the soil of rapport with my daughter, that by taking off one, two, or three times a week with my wife, and we'll pay for a babysitter or whatever, get grandma, grandpa to come in and look after the kids, whatever it is, that by investing time in dating after marriage, courtship after marriage, we will actually be investing in the marriage itself. So it's not just the choice today to be at peace with oneself, but we're choosing the consequences of that choice over time. So that even though I haven't resolved all the differences in the marriage, and I haven't necessarily completely healed for the gap in the first 12 years or so that I was not properly devoted to this child, is it possible that we can still be at peace with ourselves? Because even though not everything is resolved, but time has been allocated, and it's specific and it's designated, and I'm focused, I'm determined, I'm committed, that has to be given to my wife, my daughter, my husband, my child, or the personal project which suddenly gets behind, or the commitment we made to the community, a special contribution of time or money, and now they're knocking on our door. Question. Even when we take care of the priorities, health, career, marriage, children, whichever order we want to put it in, is it possible that there will be other things that enter without expectation, or that are the result of negligence on my part, whether it's other members of the family that we are umbilically related to and can't just get rid of them because they kind of live downstairs or upstairs or wherever, or they're next door, or they're just too closely related that we just can't say, we're not having anything to do with you? Is it possible by being negligent in other areas, whether it's being more responsible in finances, and there I am with a great salary, but taking upon myself too many things that need to be maintained financially, that when I take a cut in salary, I discover that I haven't been putting enough money aside for retirement and for weddings of the children or financing the children's further education? Is it possible that even by taking care of the main points, there still might be something that will put me out of integrity and I'm out of peace again? So Moshe, what was the secret in the end? What was the secret that you say you found serenity? And I think Moshe might answer, well, I didn't really find serenity in the sense that I'm constantly serene, constantly at peace. But what I did discover is that when I hit that point of, oh my gosh, my life is in turmoil with my career, or my marriage, or my relationship with my kids, and it forced me to commit time. It forced me to rearrange my schedule. It forced me to recommit to the most important things in my life, whether it's my health, my spouse, my children. That enabled me to be at peace, at least with that section, that part of my life. And of course there's had to be adjustments along the way. I've had to make some compromises and some changes. But because I know every week, twice a week, my child gets signed out and we go and do our own thing, I know I'm going to have a relationship with that child way into teenagers. I'm not saying I'm going to have a great relationship and we're always going to see eye to eye, but I am investing in probably one of my greatest and most valuable assets. I may not solve every problem by going out with my wife, with my husband, 2-3 times a week, whether we need even to go for professional help for certain differences that we just are so sharp we can't resolve together, or no, we can figure that out by communicating more respectfully and spending more time listening, talking, going for walks, doing things that we both enjoy, or doing things that you enjoy, doing things I enjoy, and we share and take turns in that. Is it possible that even if we don't resolve all the differences, but by the fact that we're both giving each other time like that, we can be at peace that we're working on the marriage and that we have got a better chance of making it work than if we pretend that the issues will somehow get resolved, but really the love is being eroded away gradually as the years go by and my commitment to the career becomes stronger because I have to pay the bills and the increasing bills of all the other things that the cost of living just goes up and the children grow up and so do the expenses, and then we've got less time for ourselves until we wake up, the children are out of the house, and we don't have enough of a relationship in the marriage, and we find that we've got more time together than we ever had before and don't know how to talk, listen, relate, be respectful of the differences, and now we're falling apart. So the question is not can we find peace consistently or constantly, but if we can find the time, the commitment to put, designate, plan time for the marriage, for the children, for my personal growth, for my personal health, whether it's an exercise program, whether it's going on the treadmill, or whether you need the pressure of having paid 3 months in advance for that program, and now I just don't want to waste the money by not turning up, and so I have to go. Whichever way it is, but find a way to put time for my own health, to cut down on the caffeine, or only 5 pizzas instead of 6 a day, to cut down on the junk, because when I make one choice to eat less junk, am I making one choice, or am I also choosing all the consequences of that one choice? That if I'm cutting down on caffeine, cutting down on junk food, I'm also making a choice of how my body is going to feel short and long term. That I become less of a candidate for heart disease, cancer, God forbid, in the future. That when I'm making a choice to go on the treadmill today, I'm not just choosing energy today. I'm choosing to be a healthier, happier person taking care of themselves tomorrow and the next day. And the accumulation of those choices creates more peace with my body over time. Is it possible that by putting aside a little bit more money for retirement and spending a little bit less than we earn, and investing the difference in our future, that mutual funds, the way their track record has been the last good 20 years, a reasonable 8 to 15% interest on an annual basis can easily be $1 million retirement account at age 59, 64. Not unreasonable. Is it possible that when I make a choice today to spend less and invest a little bit more, even if it's only a few dollars, but $6 a day, which I think a lot of us would not notice, go on a magazine, on a pretzel, on a Coke, on a drink, on something superfluous, but in its accumulation, $6 a day over a year is $2,000 in an IRA, individual retirement account, can be anywhere between half to $1 million retirement account at 59. No exaggeration. Is it possible that if I don't give value to the small choices in health, in the marriage, with a smile, the kiss, the hug, and spending a few minutes listening, a few minutes talking with a child, a few minutes out for myself, is it possible that I'm really not just investing for today, but the consistency of that over time, even if it's only two times, and then three times a week, and then four times a week, the consistency of it creates more peace with oneself. Even if I'm way overweight or I'm not properly nourished, but I've started a program and incrementally, slowly, I'll fall a few times, but I keep coming back to it. Can I be at peace with myself now? Absolutely. Can I even be at peace with myself now, knowing that the differences are still real between my child and myself, but we're already putting time aside to play, to joke around, to kid around, to learn together, to go to something together that we both enjoy? How many times we find ourselves out of integrity because I walk in the house, the phone is ringing, I've got the email, the voicemail, correspondence, and the child, "Dad, could you play with me Monopoly?" only averages about 4 hours a game. Or, "Dad, could you play ping pong?" Or, "Dad, can you help me with my homework?" And suddenly, all these designs and plans for peace, I'm suddenly out of integrity. Here I am in competition between spouse, child, phone call, correspondence, email, voicemail. Got to get dressed for the appointment, the dinner that I promised to attend because I missed the last one because I was busy with the kids. And now, where do we go when we're out of integrity? And the question which will always be, what's the greater commitment? Which is my greatest commitment? And often I will commit to that which is easier to pull off than invest in something which is harder in the short term, but much easier long term. Because by investing small now in the marriage, in the children, in our health, in our finances, I'm really investing in an easier future. And by investing, son, tomorrow, mañana, resolved a lot of problems. Tomorrow I'll play you Monopoly. Tomorrow I'll play you ping pong. Tomorrow I'll help you with your homework. I'm too busy now. If I can't give even two... Okay, you know what, son? I'm very busy, but you're more important than anything else I'm doing right now. Let me give you at least 2 minutes a game of ping pong. Or at least 2 minutes. Let's see what is the homework. Maybe I can get you started. At least by acknowledging that you're as important or more important than the email, voicemail, correspondence, bills, the dinner. I'll be 2 minutes late. And how many dinners did we really come late to? They started late anyway. And if I miss the first 5 minutes of the movie, I'll catch it when I buy the video, or I'll hear it from someone else. It won't be such a loss. But will I have the opportunity to invest with this kid when they turn teenager and they didn't have me the first 12, 13 years? With my wife, if I don't invest the first 10 years, is it possible that I could erode the relationship to the point where they lose the desire to even employ the same effort anymore, to bust their tail anymore, to wait for me anymore? It's the earlier years of investing which look like we're not getting the major dividends, but actually it's the early investors that get the biggest power of accumulation down the line. But it's never too late to start. It's never too late to start, but it's later than we think. But it's never too late. Many times we want to leave from a wedding, but I want to stay. But wait a minute. I've got to get up early tomorrow for work. And when does the day begin? At 6 a.m.? No! My mashgiach, Rabbi Moshe Schwab in Gateshead, in Yeshiva, used to tell us, the day begins the night before. You want to get up strong and energized for all the activities of the day ahead. It's not dependent on what time I get up and how I get up. It's dependent on how I prepared by going to sleep, when I go to sleep, and how I go to sleep. Staying at the wedding or not staying at the wedding is not a choice of how much more to stay for, drink for, dance for, photograph for. It's a choice of what's going to be my level of functioning tomorrow. When I make a choice between spouse and the male, I'm making a choice between investing in my marriage today and tomorrow. And I'm between that or opening up the mail, three quarters of which is junk. That's the reality. But it's curiosity. I wonder who's written to me. I wonder what checks might be there or what bills might be there. Late for appointment and one spouse needs a little bit of time or went through a difficult day. How about calling to say, I'm delayed, I'm at a staff meeting that's gone on over time, and I will be 10 minutes late. And spend those 10 minutes with one spouse, with one's kids. What staff meeting? True story. I know someone by the name of Avi Shulman. He's a tremendous educator. And he gave this advice. And the staff... I'm at a staff meeting that's gone on over time, and I will be 10 minutes late. And spend those 10 minutes with one spouse, with one's kids. What staff meeting? True story. I know someone by the name of Avi Shulman. He's a tremendous educator. And he gave this advice. And the staff meeting is STAFF. Special time afforded for family. I'm sorry, I can't make that night. I have a staff meeting. Another one? How many staff meetings does this guy have? Staff meeting special time afforded for family. We're in a business meeting and we're out of integrity because we're not getting to the main points and it's going on and on. And my body wants to be in the car on its way home and my brain is saying, why do I have to be here? Will it make a difference? Being out of shalom, being out of peace is the definition of incongruency, meaning to say, my mind, my body, and emotion are not working together. And now we're going to get to the real crux of what shalom, what peace really is. Peace is body, mind, that's thoughts, emotions, and soul, focused on the same thing. When my body is playing Monopoly, but my brain is in the office, is it possible my kid will pick up? If my brain is on the phone, oh my gosh, it's the boss. Shall I flip open the cell phone or shall I continue ping pong with my son? And what message do we send to our son when we say, hold on a second, son. Hi, boss. Yeah, I'm really sorry. I'm right now with an extremely important client. I really can't talk now. I'll call you back right after the game, after the appointment. Click. What message do we send to our most important client? And is it not true? Is it not true that our spouse and our child is our most important client after ourselves? Absolutely. The message we're sending is very powerful. Even if we've made many mistakes, it's not too late. I would even tell you, get someone to call you in the middle of the game and say, oh, hi boss, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you right now. I'm in the middle of something extremely important with someone who I just cannot let go of. I'm just too into this. I'll tell you another time. Bye. You can even be abrupt, and your kid gets, wow, I'm that valuable to dad. I had no idea. Make it up if necessary to heal a little bit. We'll talk about lying later on. Being at peace with oneself means that the mind and the emotion and the heart and the soul, the thoughts, the body are in one place. How many times you're on a conversation with a friend and within a minute they're still talking to you or responding to you, but you know they're not there. You can tell, but how do you know? Because you realize they're probably staring at some memo on their desk, or they're looking at the caller ID on a different phone call, or they're finished with you and they're not interested in the preamble or the end of the conversation or just getting to find out about personal things. No, we finished the guts of the business conversation. Now let me move on. You're not important at this point. How many times we feel that? Shalom is a very interesting word, because even though it translates correctly as peace, shalom, at its root, comes from the word shalem. What does shalem mean?
Complete.
Complete. What is the concept, by definition, of completion? In concept, completion means parts working together. Parts coming together to be one whole, complete unit. The word shalom, in Hebrew, God's holy tongue, refers specifically to different parts working together, focusing simultaneously. When a person's mind and heart is focused, it's a different power. And don't let anyone convince you that someone is not capable of it. We all are. How do we know? Identify your favorite sport and look how focused one can be. You can get a kick in the shin 40 minutes before the whistle goes, and you're still putting in 100%, 110%, and the whistle goes, end of game, and now you're limping off the pitch. Wait a minute. You got kicked 40 minutes ago. What happened? And now suddenly, oh, it's throbbing. It is painful. Where was your body and mind 40 minutes ago? And the answer is, it was focused on the game. And when the body, mind, soul, emotion are together, it's amazing what it can ignore. It's amazing how focused it can be. It's amazing what it can say, hold off, we're busy right now with something of greater value. The power of focus is available to everyone by the power of choice. Nothing more than that. It might be a training and a discipline for more of us than others, but it's still a choice. And in its accumulation, we become more disciplined. And in the discipline, we become more in control. And here comes the next part of peace. Being at whole with oneself means we're not pizu nefesh. That's the term in Hebrew when a person feels torn in many directions. In English, I think we use the word overwhelmed. We're stretched in too many directions. Why is that? Because at the same time that I'm at work, my heart is on the marriage that might not be working so well. Or my emotions are invested in the child who's suffering depression because they're not doing well in school. Or my focus might be at home. At least that's what it looks like. No, it's only my body's at home. But my mind is still on the client and how to close the deal. And how to get to the phone and figure out how to strategize tomorrow's appointment so we can still get the deal back on track. I'm not at home. Is it possible that a child could grow up at home seeing that mom or dad is geographically there but emotionally not connected when the child is encountering mom and dad hundreds of times a day, every time they pass each other, kitchen, hallway, sharing the programs on the TV, whatever it is that their encounter is it possible that I could take my kid for granted and they don't even get a smile and a hug at least 5 times a day? Waking up in the morning, going off to school in the morning, coming home, going to bed, and somewhere in between. If that's not happening, is it possible? My child could live in my home the best part of 18 hours a day, 16 hours a day for the first 18 years of their life and yet have left home emotionally 10 years ago at the age of 12, 10, 11, and it happens all the time. And it's because daddy wasn't home, mommy wasn't home. I could have been there, but only in part, not in whole. And therefore my child learns that I don't have to, in my marriage, when I grow up, I could do the same thing. And if I don't unlearn what I saw as role models,
I could hurt myself and those closest to me, even with the best of intentions. I'm not going to do what Dad said. I'm not going to do what Mum did. And then I discover I'm saying or living and behaving those hidden loyalties the same way I was raised. It's a choice, and it's a discipline, and it's a training. It might be more for some of us than others, but the power of choice starts in the first choice. 1,000 miles, as they say, begins with the first step. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. I know it's not kosher, but that's besides the point. It's not how much we've got to work on to be whole, to be complete, to be b'shalom in the moment. It's training in that choice. It's an amazing word in Hebrew. The word tam is unfortunately translated as innocent. Jacob was called the Ish Tam. Now Jacob is one of the patriarchs. In chapter 25 of Genesis, he's called an Ish Tam. And that was considered a great name, a great medal. What does a tam mean? It's unfortunately translated as simple. But it doesn't mean that. Tam means shalem. That's what the Targum, the Unkelus, the Aramaic translation, says. Tam means complete. Complete means parts coming together. What does Rashi say? Tam means kalibai kenpiv. The what's on his heart, what's on his mind, kenpiv, that's what comes out his mouth. Congruency, the what's going on inside is what comes out the mouth. That they're being real to themselves with others. Emotional honesty is congruency. That's being at peace with myself. When I'm not honest with you, whether it's a matter of deception or whether it's self-deception, whether it's just emotionally I'm not being real to you about my feelings, what I'm really being is incomplete. I'm out of integrity. I'm not at peace with myself because I'm not being real. Being real is being honest emotionally about my weaknesses. I'm struggling, but I'm working on it. I'm pretty low down, but I'm getting there slowly. I may not be where I should be, but I can still be at peace with myself because I'm in progress, I'm on track. And it's not who's winning, because I'm only in competition against myself. And children respect that honesty. Teenagers respect that honesty. Even a spouse who's been hurt, but sees that their husband or the wife is at least starting to be honest about their weaknesses, that's a beginning. That's an honesty that another person can respect. Congruency in how we speak, being reflective of how we feel. That's why in Hebrew the word panim, face, is the same word as pnim, which means the inside of a person. Because the face reflects what's going on inside. And when I say, no darling, I'm fine, nothing's wrong at work at all, nothing, I'm not agitated in the slightest, I'm not upset at all. She can hear and see from my voice, from my face, that I'm not congruent. My body and my language, what's going on inside, what's going on outside, is not real. It's not consistent. Being at peace with myself means I'm learning consistency. I'm learning to be consistent in my focus, that when I'm at home, my body is at home and my mind is focused. My emotions are, how can I be sensitive in the kitchen, in the living room, with the kid, in this game, with the homework? Being congruent, being shalem, being at peace, being complete, being whole with oneself means that when we're at work, the body, mind and soul is focused. Whether it's a phone call, whether it's the memo, whether it's talking to the boss, whether it's dealing with a client, it's the power of focus living in the now. We have an expression that there are three time zones. There's the past, there's the present, and then there's the future. Those are the only three time zones that exist. Which of the three do we live in? We only live in one. So the past is always history. As soon as it happened, it's gone, it's finished, it's history. And the future never exists, because as soon as we get there, it's already the present. So the future never exists. We never live in the future. The only moment we ever live in is the now. They have a cute expression. I think it goes, the past is history, the future is a mystery, and the now is called the present. And that's why it's a gift. And now is the only moment that we own. It's the only time we can make a real choice. And if I put my mind into thinking about the past, and I analyze it for a few decades, is it possible that I could be living in a period of time that doesn't exist for me? Now, as much as it's useful to analyze, to propel me into the future and understand myself better, that I can make better choices, it's useful. But if I'm constantly going back into the past and blaming my mother, my father, my boss, my wife, my husband, my children for ruining my life, my youth, the best years of my life I gave this husband, that wife had no affection for me, ruined my life, I can't ever have a relationship now. As long as I blame or accuse or complain, I've really found a way out of taking responsibility. Because if I accuse you, A is for accuse, B is for blame, C is for complain, and D is for deny that it's my problem, and E means give excuses, then I've got out of taking responsibility for choosing to live in the now. Because if I can blame the past, or worry about the future, which never exists, I can be concerned and plan for the future, but if I worry and become anxious, anxiety-ridden by the future, instead of living in the now, is it possible that by worrying about the past or the future, I'm not focusing in the only moment that I live in, the now? Being focused in the now with heart, body and soul, whether it's driving, whether it's eating, whether it's sleeping, whether it's talking to the spouse, whether it's listening, it's the power of now, which is a choice that everybody has and can employ, is the power of accumulation that allows us to feel at peace. That when I'm playing, I'm playing. When I'm eating, I'm eating. When I'm sleeping, I'm sleeping. When I'm at work, I'm at work. When I'm with the spouse, I'm with the spouse. When I'm with the kids, I'm with the kids. And when I'm time out for me, it's time out for me. It's all a question of what am I doing in the now? Where's my mind? Where's my heart? Where's my body? Am I living congruently in the moment? That's the real secret. Beyond this, there's much more to say on the subject of shalom. We are told that when God created the universe, in his description, chapter 1, I think verse 7, of the Rakia, Rakia means the firmament, God said he took two opposite forces, fire and water, two opposing forces, two elements in nature which are completely opposite, he fused them together and created Shamayim, Shamayim heavens. Shamayim is the fusion of Eish, fire, Mayim and water. Says the Talmud, based on a verse on Eiv, the book of Job, which comes from the verse I just quoted in Genesis, the Zohar in Vayikra, Leviticus, page 12b, tells us that God said, Ose shalom bimramav, he creates peace above, hu yase shalom aleinu, he's the one that helps us make peace in our lives. How does that work? The God who makes peace above makes peace in our lives? Don't we have to make peace by our own choices? And the answer is very interesting. When we've made thousands of choices to eat whatever we feel like, and it's not always healthy, to spend however we want to spend, and it's not always been good for our finances, and to say whatever we want to our spouse or our child, and it's not always been endearing, is it possible that the habit that I've created and the momentum that I'm coming from is so strong that when I do want to make a new choice to change the direction in my eating, or my exercises, or my spouse and that marriage, and parenting, is it possible that the momentum I'm coming from keeps pulling me back to that old way of talking, thinking, speaking, shouting, eating, drinking, spending? So it comes along the verse and tells us, when we make that small change, God helps us along the way. We can't do it alone. That small choice, including God in the equation. And that's why it says, Ose shalom bimramav. Like God took opposing forces upstairs, and he brought them together. Hu yase shalom aleinu. When we try to make peace with ourselves, and with our spouse, and with our children, with our finances, with our health. When we try to make peace with ourselves, hu yase shalom aleinu. He helps us to make peace, because many times, if I'm trying to make a change of direction, the momentum from where I'm coming from and all the hidden loyalties of where I'm coming from sabotage my own efforts, and then I give up and say, it doesn't work, it's too late for me, I'll never change. That I'm not allowed to say, because the power of choice is so great, I can take a different direction and remain on that direction, even if I fall 1,000 times a day, a week. The book of Job, chapter 25, verse 2 says, Ham shel fafachad imoy. God has the dominion and awe. Hu ase shalom bimramav. And he makes peace above. says the Zohar an amazing insight, that when we make a choice in our minds, on a higher level, when we speak about that choice, and on an even higher level, we take action on that choice. We not only think about exercising, we talk about it, then we find out a great place to go, and we buy the treadmill, and we go on the program. Thought, speech, and action create forces. We call them malachim. Unfortunately, they're translated as angels, and most of us didn't get beyond third grade version of what angels are, but they are spiritual forces which we create. And those forces help us in the direction we want to go in. Those angels, so to speak, those forces speak on our behalf when we make a positive choice, and speak against us when we make a negative choice. Hu aseh shalom bimramav. God is making peace upstairs between the opposing forces that we create in our own lives. And he gives us a chance again and again that the variables that come into our lives, the encounters of people, the books, or tapes, or classes, programs that we encounter in our lives, are all coming from upstairs as a result of the choices we're making downstairs. There is a correlation between our choices here and then what happens later in the world. That what we put out comes back because we actually create forces by it. I will end off on the following. That sometimes the greatest peace that we are able to accomplish in our lives is the realization that even amidst the apparent chaos, there really is shalom. That pieces are coming together. That in God's plan, so to speak, there really is a perfect calculation. And that calculation is that nothing will go wrong, even when it goes wrong. Even when it goes wrong, there's always a purpose. In Hebrew, we call it fusing two opposites. Gevura, which looks like strict justice, and kindness, on the other hand, chesed. Gevura and chesed, when they are brought together, they fuse and they create a different combination. They create something called da'at. Da'at is the knowledge that both what appears to be negative, gevura, and what appears to be positive, chesed, kindness, are really sourced from the same place. That the same creator who allows for tragedy and for generosity is really the source of both. And both of them are coming as a result of our choices. How it relates is very complex. But there's a place in our heart, in our soul, that can actually recognize that the ultimate shalom is that even when things go wrong, they're really going right and we don't see always how. Even when I messed up with the first kid, is it possible that my first child becomes the training ground for all the others? Is it possible that I mess up big time when I first opened up my business and made some serious mistakes and got myself in debt all over the place? Is it possible that the very mistakes I made in my first business becomes the training ground for the future? Harvard report claims that 96% of multi-millionaires got that way because they failed the most times in business. Is it possible that a financial setback, a medical setback, becomes the training ground for giving me a choice? Do I complain or do I say, hey, there's a lesson here. Let me take control of my focus, my eating, exercise, how I speak, how I love, how I appreciate, how I give gratitude. It's all a matter of power of choice. And I will end off, and I mean it. There was once a man walking along a cliff edge, and he was playing with his Palm Pilot. I guess he wasn't focusing on how close he was. His body was in one place and his mind was somewhere else. And suddenly, oh! Foot slipped off the edge. He went right over the cliff edge, grabbed onto a rock sticking out, and there he is on his right arm, hanging, and he's about 240 pounds, and he's screaming, help! Help! Now, he specifically took off time during the day for himself to relax. I don't know, he listened to a class on finding peace, and now he finds himself hanging on a cliff, and he's deliberately chose this location because it's all isolated, and he knows there's no one around, but he's screaming, help! Help! Someone help! And suddenly, while he's screaming, a miracle! the heavens open up, and this big giant hand comes down and falls short of a millimeter of his hand, and he says, God, help me, please, help me, please, God, help me. And God says, do you trust me? Of course I trust you, I'll do anything, anything, let go. Is there anyone else up there? The hardest part of finding peace in our lives is letting go of the old habits. It's not easy, because when I let go of my old habits, I enter the fear of an uncomfortable zone that I've not entered before. Personal growth, moving ahead in my life, in my finances, spending less than I earn, investing, saving, taking more attention to the wife, to the husband, to the children, to my health. When we let go of what we fear, that's when we can fly. Thank you for your patience.
Rabbi Riedi will take 5 minutes of questions.
Let there be peace with themselves.
Yes, sir.
Just to the Drush Rabbi, you started to mention the word shalom.
Yes.
As relating etymologically.
Yes.
To something. I figured out maybe Lev Moach, what the Shin is for. The harmony between mind and body.
Okay, very good question.
Is there anything that you had specifically in mind when you said...
Your name, sir?
Shalom?
Chris Cott. Okay. Okay. Excellent question. You reminded me of what I didn't share with you.
Yeah.
In the word shalom, the three-letter root is shalem.
Right.
King Solomon, his real name was Shlomo. Why was he Shlomo? Because in his time, he was closest to any other time in Jewish history when there was shlemut, there was completion in every aspect. That means we were the closest to God we'd ever been with the completion of the temple and all the temple service. We had consolidated all the lands that belonged to the Jewish people for the first time in our history. We were closest ever to the Messiah coming. The word shlema, which is the same word as Shlomo, Solomon, the word shlema, which means totality, complete, is made up of the following. You look inside the word and you see that it's made up of ma. Ma means what? Memhe means what? The first stage in understanding shlemut is to first see, where am I? What's going on in life? If I don't recognize where I am in my finances, in my marriage, in my career, I'm just cruising along, then I haven't got to first stage, which is awareness. What? Then I have to ask the next question, why? Is this where I really want to be? Or do I want to be giving more focus over here than just over here? So that becomes the lama. Lama means, for what purpose am I going in this direction? So you start off with ma, then you add on the lama, you get lama. To what is this purpose for? Then, when a person answers that question, that's what brings the shin, that's the shalema, the completion. Then they feel completion in their lives, that, you know, even if I haven't arrived, but I feel at peace, that I'm on course.